canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Hi, this is Stacey Barnett from Canine Detection Collaborative, and I'm here with one of my fantastic co-hosts, Crystal Wing.
Hello, friends.
And a really, really special guest that I'm really happy to have onto our podcast, Lee Laubach. Hello, Lee. How are you?
Hi. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Hi.
Yay. So, thanks for coming.
Yay, I'm really excited about this one. Really excited. So I know Lee from being judged in nose work.
And okay. Lee, I'm glad you had it in nose work.
In nose work, right. Exactly. So Lee is one of my favorite judges, and we're going to find out more about Lee because he's also a really fascinating individual with a really cool working canine background with Arson. So welcome, Lee. Really happy to have you here.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I love hearing all about this, and anytime I can talk about a dog and canines, it's a great day for me. So
Absolutely.
I feel that in my soul.
Oh my gosh, right? Yeah. I mean, I met you. I don't know which trial it was. It's been a long time. But one of my funniest memories, I don't know how funny it was. Do you remember?
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, you know which one. Yeah, the with the tarp?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Powder, yeah.
With powder. Mm-hmm. When Powder was chasing Odor and she launched herself into this tarped up area. And I just remember hearing Lee's laughter.
It was funny because it was a big open pavilion.
Right.
And a bunch of stuff in the middle that was tarped off. And for a judge, I had to see on both sides because there was hides on both sides. So I'm kind of walking back and forth because it's not easy with Powder because she's all over the place. So I was walking on one side, and then I was walking, and I couldn't see her, and I was walking to the other side thinking that she came over there, and all of a sudden I heard the tarp, and I'm like, oh, Powder's on top. And I looked up top, and there's Powder.
Yeah.
I think the other one was, was it prized at Ulster Fairgrounds? That the big elite search that there was?
No, that was Powder again.
Was that? I thought that was. No. Prize came off it. No. Okay.
No. The freak is always the.
Okay.
She's my freak.
So those are the two biggest memories. But I mean, really, the constant memory is just of how good your labs work. So I mean, that's always I just love watching pups work really well and know what they're doing and have that good bond and communication, which you guys have. So it's always a joy for me as a judge to watch that.
How long have you been judging now?
Six years judging. Wow. I would have been doing it sooner. But when I got asked the first time, which was 2016, I was still working my canine.
Yeah.
Woodruff actually asked me. And I just said, look, we're just too busy. I can't spare the time. And then, Judge retired. That's my canine's name too. His name's Judge. He retired in 2018. So that's when I, 2017, 2018, that's when I started judging.
Gotcha. Wow. Yeah, I must not have seen you in some of those earlier trials that you did. Did you ever see Judd? I met you in the earlier trials because he competed into 2019. So
okay.
Yeah, I was wondering if that overlapped. But
How long have you been doing nose work?
I started back in 2010 with my detection dog. So we were a professional detection dog. So we worked for the Allentown Fire Department.
Okay.
And we pretty much, we were only one of two dogs in the state of PA. So at the time when I got them. And so we were fairly busy.
Wow.
And which was awesome because he needed to work being a, and if you hear him bark, that's him. He just,
hey, that's cool.
He's 14 and a half and he's been smelling gas his whole life, so he's a little off.
Yeah.
Poor buddy.
Yeah.
So you switched from professional world into the judging world, and I'm kind of curious, had you been to trials, or what drew you to nose work?
What's cool about it is the NACSW that I judge for, the training as well as the trials are very similar to what we do in professional world, as far, especially with arson dogs. The almost exact, when you at a trial and you're at elite or summit level competition, you have kind of maybe four typical kind of search areas, which is like exteriors, interiors, vehicles, and maybe boxes, maybe a whole bunch of other, you know, variables you could have. When we do our recertification, which we have to get certified and recertified every year, we actually do the same thing. We do exterior searches. We do interior searches. We do vehicle searches. Pretty much anything you can think of that's very – and what I love about it, it's so similar. I mean, we're looking for accelerants. They're looking for birch, clove, and anise. So really the only difference I see is, you know, as far as the smell and odor that you're looking for. But some of the main tenets that you have in detection work follow nose work. So that's what I loved about it, and that's what I kind of – you know, got into judging, and then I just, you know, got my thing to be a trainer, and I just got accepted to be a CO. So
nice.
Yay. Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting news. That's actually really exciting news. I'm really happy to hear that. Really happy to hear that. That's a recent in the program that's just going through, or? Yes.
Yeah, it's actually going to start. So I just got accepted actually last week.
Yeah,
in the CO program, and the training starts February.
Congratulations! Thank you. We're going to be very, very lucky to have you in the Northeast here. Of course, then you can go all over for the CO stuff, but we're going to be very, very lucky to have you around here. So, I'm counting my own blessings on that one. Oh, that's fantastic! That's fantastic. So, from the training side of it, did you go through the certified nosework program, or are
yes.
you, or, okay, you did. Okay.
Yeah. I went through the certified nosework. I was, an arson dog, you know, trainer, uh-huh. things like that. Yep. But, definitely, what I loved about it, and when we went through the class, you know, Amy and we talked a lot about how it mirrors, you know, what she did in you know, her narcotics world and things like that. And how, you know, it mirrored ours as well. So it was a good refresher, as well as I learned a lot. I learned, you know, because we work in the arson world, 99.9% of them are labs. We work with labs all the time. Labs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Two main reasons. One is because they're food reward. So Judge never got food out of a bowl until he retired. So I had to train him 5 to 6 times a day just to get food into him, especially when he was young, when he was getting about 4 cups of food a day just to keep his weight.
So,
we were training a lot. But then you always know that, you know, you go out for a call at 2 a.m, you probably trained him 6 hours ago. You know what I mean? So you always felt comfortable going out on a job. So, the other reason is because arsonists are renowned for watching the fire after it starts. And we actually caught 8 people like that. And if I had a Mallee or I had a Shepherd or something like that, people would kind of like part the ways. I have a nice looking lab that wants to come up and be friendly with you. And then all of a sudden he sits next to you and starts salivating. I'm like, okay, now we got to talk, because that's his alert is a sit. And, when he smells like a gasoline or a light distillate, he really salivates, cause he just associates the smell of accelerant with food. So he just, waterworks, come on with the boy. So
basically, like, if somebody actually set the fire and they're there,
and they have some remnant of accelerant on them. Then he can, you know, alert on it. And then it's my job to find out why, you know, why they have it on them. It could have been like somebody from, you know, that might have been mowing their grass across the street. And then I go find out, oh, okay, yeah, that's why you have it on. So as long as you have a reason why you have it on. If not, then we got other issues to deal with. So
I really had no idea. I always kind of pictured the dog going in kind of after the fact and like looking at the crime scene or whatever, or potential.
And we do that and you know, evidence collection. But why, like I said, a lot of the times, especially if they have a arson issue in a city or a county or something like that, before they even start doing the investigation, they'll call me and they'll say, Lee, can you just walk judge around the crowd, just to just walk around the crowd. And then we'll do that. And kind of, for one, it puts, you know, fear, you know, fear appealing to people that, hey, there's a dog coming and I better not stick around here.
Right. Yeah. Because I guess arsonists like to come and like see what's going on, or they kind of
yeah. There's three different levels of arsonists. That three main levels. One is like a vandalism type thing, and or retribution, trying to get somebody back for something. Mm-hmm. Those people usually don't stick around. The ones that stick around are the ones that are what they kind of quote unquote call professionals, that they're actually trying to burn down their home for the insurance money. Or they pay somebody to burn down their home, and then they have to take like kind of pictures of the fire scene to prove that they set the fire and they you know, burn it down so they get paid.
Wow.
So those folks, and then there's the, which is I always found to be the scariest, is the one that have a mental condition that they like fire.
Wow.
I dealt with two in my career, and I don't want to deal with them again. So, yeah, just. Totally. I mean, the questioning is, you can't even question the people because they're so, they don't give legitimate answers. You know what I mean? But they think it's legitimate, and you just can't tell if they're lying or if they're not lying, just because they're so kind of messed up in the brain. So,
wow, that's kind of terrifying. Actually, terrifying. Yeah. I mean, I really actually didn't know that for arson dogs, it was almost always Labradors. That's a great breed, though, man.
Oh yeah, especially for beef. And you know that food reward. You know, he hasn't met a meal he doesn't want. So you know, the hardest part of him was, you know, when we go in, and the guys used to always laugh. They always used to know when we were doing the kitchen, because I'd be saying leave it like 100 times. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, I had to, because of the fact that he opens his mouth for anything except me giving him his food for an alert. It's a leave it, but unfortunately, that same people that do the insurance jobs, if they know a dog's coming, they will put poison in the hot dogs, put things in things. So I can't let him eat anything in a fire scene.
Oh, no.
Wow. People are so messed up.
Wow.
Yes. I'm curious, you know, what qualities do make a dog suitable for arson? So it's definitely the food drive.
A drive to work at all hours and kind of never kind of say, I just don't feel like working. And that's something about the handler too has a part in that, because when I trained him, I had to do a log all the time, because that always was what got subpoenaed for court. But I used to always have to change up my hours of that I would train him, because of the fact that if you put him in a schedule, at 6 a.m, at 12, and at 6, we work. If I have a fire at 3 p.m, you know how dogs can figure out schedules, and they're like, I'm going to have a freebie at 6. I'm not doing anything. So I had to pretty much change up the amount of food he got all the time, and also the kind of times. And then our trainers that were up in Maine, they would actually every month they would look at our training records and see if they could discern a pattern and let us know, hey, there's a pattern going on. You better change it, type thing. So,
wow. That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. And you did 600 over 600 cases,
over 600 fires and over 1,000 demonstrations we did.
Wow.
You've been busy.
Yes.
Judge was busy.
Well, you know, we drive somewhere. He'd sleep the whole way there, do a sniff, and then I drive all the way back.
Okay, so you did all the work.
But I couldn't ask for a better partner. He's the best in the world. You know what I mean? Just like all of us, you know, we have our things, but like I said, I was the dope on the end of the rope. He made me look good. So
the arson dog Uber.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, they always call me Judge's driver.
Yeah.
So I even got we won an award for a fire prevention or a fire something, and the one state rep actually put on the certificate to Judge and his driver.
Judge and his driver. Oh my gosh. I mean, speaking of awards, was he the 2016 Arson Dog of the Year?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, he was the 2016 American Humane Arson Dog of the Year. So
that's amazing.
Which is really cool, a huge honor for us. Mostly because it was twofold. It was one, we had to get nominated by somebody, which I still don't know who nominated us. But and then it was a 30 judges pick, and then also kind of a popular vote too. So
wow,
it was awesome. Wow. So out of all the United States and Canada, we got that. So
that's amazing. That's amazing. Right here in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly.
So if people know the Billy Joel song, that's what we're talking about right there. So
something I was kind of curious about, if you don't mind, the traditional methods before dogs, like how are arson dogs really impacting the effectiveness, the efficiency of the investigations? Like, what's the difference?
It's a good, great question, actually. For one, we just, the point of the arson dogs, we actually, to get an arson dog, first of all, you have to show that you have an arson issue. So we showed that. And what was nice about it, just kind of go end game right away, we dropped by the time we were finished in our first 4 years, and then even got lower at the end of our career, we dropped the arson rate 60% in the Lehigh County and surrounding areas. That was a huge drop because, you know, it's not a victimless crime. You know what I mean? Even if they're burning a vacant house, if it's a row home, other, you know, places get that too as well. But to go to your point in question, one, it's a, when you're doing an investigation, and I did investigations before I had an arson dog too, to try to use some type of meter to find out for an accelerant is tough to know even where to search as far as that goes. You know, you have a, whatever, even if you have like a 1,300 to 1,500 square foot house, I can't be taking that meter everywhere and trying to point it in things. It's just not time efficient. And calculations a lot and the kind of getting up on point, they're always getting questioned in court because of the fact that the calibrations might be off and that type of thing. So, and I have always had bad kind of circumstances with those meters. They've really never came up real good for me. The other thing is you're not going to take a meter out to do and wand people because that's going to be against, you know.
Like probable cause and all that. Know, right?
Exactly. So us just going down a public street with him is a different story.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't even know what he's doing really until he does what he does. The other thing is that trying to find, you know, we can do and look at fire patterns and see different things and kind of tell us where something starts, but that then we have to explain that all in court. There's no real evidentiary chain that we have. Like, you know, when you have ballistics, when you have usually a homicide with a gun or something to that effect, you don't have that with a fire. So, and a fire burns a lot of the evidence away. So having a dog that can pinpoint it and having a certified dog that will have it, that if I take it and send our sample to the crime lab and the crime lab goes, there's accelerant there, but it's not to the level that the crime lab can call it gasoline or paint thinner or whatever, because the dog is certified and tested, the sample could still be entered into evidence.
Wow.
Even though the crime lab says it's there, but it's not up to the level that the court having a certified dog will allow that into evidence.
Wow.
That's why having a certified dog is super important.
Wow. So basically it's saving evidence that you wouldn't normally be able to use.
Exactly. Getting that evidence. And then also there's kind of a backdoor reason too, is just, that's why we did so many demonstrations. Mm-hmm. The best fire that happens is the one that never happens.
Right.
So if I can take him out and show the folks that I'm doing a demonstration in front that one, if you start your house on fire and you use an accelerant, this guy's coming to find you.
Uh-huh.
And also, you know, when I'm saying it's, you're supposed to have a smoke detector here, you're supposed to have, you know, all the fire prevention type stuff. When I have him as a demo with that, people are more apt to listen to me because I have a dog instead of me just up there talking.
Yeah.
I had a couple, parents call me up at my office back in 2015 that said, my son came home from school and said that he was at a fire prevention program and I'm supposed to have smoke detectors in every bedroom. And I said, yeah, that's true. And he goes, yeah, some guy named Judge told him that. So I didn't even get credit for that. So
Good job, Judge.
Yeah. Judge's driver actually did.
Yeah, Judge's driver did say that.
That's great. That's so great. I mean, he probably wouldn't have said that, you know, if he didn't have the dog with him.
No, and definitely. I mean, that's why a lot of people have asked us back. And even after, you know, he retired, we still did demonstrations until you couldn't do them anymore.
Wow.
Because when he loved it, he loved going in front of the, you know, the kids and things like that. And he was such a gentle, you know, and that's the other thing, you know, we see, you know, I've been there too. Any kind of dog lover, you know, you go to a dog show or a dog demonstration and, you know, they're doing bite work or they're doing all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, but I want to go see the dog. And know what I mean? He's one of the only kind of law enforcement canines that actually can come out of the, after doing a demonstration, get petted, talk to, get pictured, whatever you want to do, which was kind of a unique situation.
Yeah. Wow. That's just fascinating. That's just fascinating. And oh my gosh, that's special.
It'd be great to hear the beginning story too, because I know I've heard that in a couple interviews of how you got him, because I was like, wow, how expensive would a dog like that be? And then when I was hearing you tell the story, so if you wouldn't mind sharing that with our listeners.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I was back in 2009, 2010, I was a chief fire marshal for the city of Allentown. And being on the fire department, there's only really one. You can possibly, depending on where your location is, you might be able to get a search and rescue dog. But the only other one is really to get an accelerant detection canine. I knew kind of like I did a lot of research on it. And there's really two main ones that are certified. One is through ATF and the other one is through the State Farm Program, which they're both certified. They're both the same kind of dogs. They're just two different funding mechanisms and how they get things. So we were lucky enough to get a State Farm scholarship to get the dog. And actually, the whole thing included the pup, my 5 weeks of training up in Alfred, Maine, and then all my room and board up there, all my the trip up, trip back, the dog, his certification, which we had to certify and we had to pass our tests. And they imprinted the dog, but we kind of finished the imprinting and then did the search patterns that we had to do. And really the biggest part was bonding with the pup. And then pretty much they said that, you know, everything included was about a $25,000 bill for each pup, you know, with all the training and that type of thing. And then all they asked us was that we have to, the department has to, you know, make available that he has vet care and that type of thing. And that he is recertified for 5 years, a commitment for at least 5 years. So we were good with that. I was like, I don't care. I'll pay it out of my own pocket if I have to, I don't care. But we had such support from the community. My vet that takes care of my my pets, he sponsored Judge and took care of everything from, you know, his regular vaccines to, you know, he got something in his paw. He came right out to see him. You know, took care when he was 9, he got a TPLO, you know, ACL surgery, took care of that. The rehab center took care of all the money for the his rehab that he did. Food was donated to him. His collars that, I'll tell you what, I can't say enough for blocky dog collars. They saved his butt from a hole a couple times. You know, they were all given to by community groups and that type of thing. So he was, you know, outpouring of love, and you can just see it. Unfortunately, he's going through some health issues right now. You know, when we got that kind of news, the outpouring of support from everywhere. I mean, even one cool thing that we got to do was AIG Insurance actually called us up and they said they love the program. They love what Judge does. Can you come down and do in New York City and do a demonstration and talk to our folks and then do a simulcast to all their things around the United States? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I said, we'll send a car for you. Like, well, they sent a freaking Lincoln Town Car for us. And, you know, we got a first class ride to New York City. You know, it's so we definitely had I couldn't have done it without all the support that we had. But that's the initial part of it. And then we weren't home. We got home, I think, 8 hours or something like that. We got our first call out.
Wow.
Whoa.
So it was a pretty much whirlwind. And then it was you know, every, you know, you can count on Thanksgiving, you were going out, you know, you count on Christmas, you're going out. We love doing it. And like I said, the people were so grateful. And we'd go to fire open houses, and where I live, Palmer Township actually has pretty much a open house every year in Fire Prevention Month, which is October. And we always go up there and do the demonstration and that type of stuff. And they've always been, you know, supportive with, you know, gift card for anything we wanted as far as that goes. So we've really had a lot of support from the community, which was awesome for a pup.
That's just wonderful. That's wonderful. It's I haven't heard most of the story. I mean, I looked at, you've got the, there's a great video from the news, the news site about, I think back in 2011, right?
Yeah.
That highlighted when you got Judge.
Yeah.
And that was just amazing to just watch. It was.
Well, and I had fun on Judge's Facebook page. I won't lie. I was creeping.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
that's
what
all
a great
my wife's
job.
Doing. My wife is the, I always call, she's the propaganda person for you know, she's the videoer. She's, and I couldn't have done it like we said, but I, you know, had to train him 5 or 6 times a day. And you know how you guys, you know, in kind of nose work, we do containers. We kind of did that too, but we use paint cans because I had to burn stuff in them. Yeah. We always did what I always told the kids was, you know, especially when they're at a hockey game and they see that thing about hide the ball kind of thing. As we did with Judge, you know, we'd have 8 containers out there. One would have accelerant in it. We'd go down, he'd pick it out. I'd take him around, hide his, you know, go around the corner. My wife would move the cans around and he'd come back and have to find it again, that type of stuff. And we'd do that 15, 20 times a day. So,
Wow.
Okay. In one of the videos, somebody mentioned the number of accelerants. How many actual accelerants?
61.
Oh.
So he's not going to tell me what it is. If I could do that, I'd be on some type of poster or something like that. You know, or he would, you know, why once for gasoline, twice for paint.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But no, 61, in that 61, and like people, like when I say that, I can see in their minds, they're starting to think of them and trying to name them. Like in that 61, you can think of, like, say, lighter fluid, for instance. Lighter fluid has probably, depending on where you live in the country, 5 or 6 different chemical combinations. So that's what's in that 61 kind of thing. So, like, you know, they don't need a lot of the freeze kind of things that you need it in the Northeast. You don't need that in Arizona. Okay. So, I mean, so that in that 61, you know, we're not going to deal, we dealt with some off ones. What we dealt with mostly is what people usually have around. Like, so usually arson is a crime of convenience. Mm-hmm. So if I have gasoline, and like gasoline became a little bit more not as popular because gasoline stations started having videos.
Okay.
If they see you going up with a Deer Park bottle to a gasoline thing, we're gonna, they're not drinking it. They're not, you know what I mean? So, so that kind of became, so maybe the gasoline they had stored in their garage, maybe they used, or people would use if they broke into the garage, that type of stuff. Usually lighter fluid, you know, people have it on their, you know, grills outside or whatever, and they keep it outside. So that's an easy one to pick up.
Yeah.
That type of stuff, kerosene, you know, that all, you know, anything that you would have at a house type thing, you know, people used. And that was our major kind of thing. They don't use, I think in one case that we've had, somebody used diesel fuel. I've never seen it used before because diesel fuel is like very hard to start. Once it gets started, this thing, but it's not a quick lighting type of fuel.
Gotcha. So I guess you do actually find out what kind of accelerants, because once he alerts,
we send it to the crime lab and they tell us what it is. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That was going to be my next question. So
I'm just sitting here like all of our nosework handlers, when they hear 61 target odors, their heads are probably exploding. I think.
And what's nice about it is we train with, and it's kind of very similar to, you know, everybody, and you know, this from training and things like that, you know, people freak out of like, well, I miss clove or I miss, really, if you got birch, you're going to get clove and anise, because really they're looking for that novel odor that's not, it's almost not supposed to be there kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the same way with the accelerant. They kind of all have the same smell. To the dog. So we use what's called, we have a chemist that actually for our training aids that makes it down to what's called 50% evaporated gasoline. So if you can think of a scale of 0 to 100,
okay.
Zero being a light distillate, like a paint thinner, yep. and then diesel fuel being a heavy distillate at 100, gasoline, and then when she distills it down for us, it becomes 50. So it becomes in the middle of that. So okay. if you keep him in the middle, he doesn't miss highs and he doesn't miss lows.
Gotcha.
So that's, you know, so if we put like yeah. something out there for him, like if I put, because I want him to know diesel fuel, so I'll put in a training thing, I'll put a couple drops of diesel out there. Mm-hmm. He finds that, we'll have a immediate training session right after that that has the 50% evaporated gasoline. So I bring him back to center again. If you do too much on the like one side or the other, the yeah. dog starts becoming parted towards left to center or right to center. You want him always in the center.
That makes a lot of sense. And the other question I have, because it's just occurring because I'm thinking about the chemical properties of kind of what you're looking for, is that your target odors are all very volatile, right? So, you know, when I'm thinking about essential oil, you know, we're thinking about very volatile substances, right? And since you're, you know, you're a judge and now you're going to be a certifying official and you're an instructor, so you've seen a ton of nose work and a ton of dogs working essential oil. Do you see similarities in odor behavior
yes.
between some of the accelerants and the essential oils?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. To a certain extent, definitely the way it moves as far as weather conditions is definitely very similar.
Yeah.
The only thing that's kind of a little different is, you know, the
quantity.
Accelerants kind of move away when it gets really hot. They kind of very off gas very quick, and sometimes okay. depending on the amount that's there might off gas and not be there anymore.
Okay, so it just dissipates a lot,
right?
It
dissipates more. Almost okay. nothing. But within a time frame of a trial, I don't think that would be the case, because like I said, we're doing a morning search, or, you know, they always put the hides out like kind of right before the yep. things, so that wouldn't dissipate that much. But you do see what we always call the hot wall effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the hide is placed on where the sun is beating down,
yep.
a lot of times, you know, it'll go up to the ceiling and kind of curve over, and then the dogs might catch it in the middle of the room mm-hmm. and then have to work it back to where the hot wall is.
Wow. Yeah.
Or if it's a small room, catch it all the way over the other wall. And that's where the handler's got to kind of be in tune with their dog and like, oh, he's air scenting more. So it's probably coming from over there.
Wow.
And that's what our instructors and our main trainer was, he was a Zen guy when it came to kind of putting dogs with handlers. Uh-huh. And I mean, I couldn't ask for a better dog than he gave me.
yeah.
And but also he kind of very strict about the bond with your partner.
Yeah.
You know, he harped on that from the first time I met him to the last time. I mean, we were retiring and we were done, and he could have just said bye. You keep that bond with your boy. You know what I mean? And that's kind of, you know,
yeah.
they were very strict about, they wanted him to retire at least, you know, around 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They said, look, the pup worked his whole life. Let him be a dog for a while.
Wow.
You don't know how much time he has left. You can do without, you know, they can do without him. They'll have another dog. And, you know, thing. And we did it. The fact that we got another pup from another department went up and got the replacement for Judge. Mm-hmm. And he went in service like a month prior, or she went in service a month prior to Judge retiring. So,
Wow. So now Allentown still, I mean, they still have a
the Lehigh Valley does. City of Bethlehem has it now. Yep.
Ah, gotcha. Yep. Yeah. So Judge kind of started a whole,
yes.
whole thing there. And
he was the first one in the Lehigh Valley.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, showing the value and everything of having.
And that was the really, I think the thing that we liked the most is that, you know, having only a couple, you know, Philly and us having, you know, mm-hmm. and a couple other sprinkling part-time dogs at the beginning. Now having at least 12 across the Commonwealth shows, you know, hey, this program works. And not only, like I said, just for fires, but also for the educational part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That is fantastic. When they are selecting a dog, so we know they like Labradors. Is there something specific that, like, a certain quality of the dog, other than the fact that they love food, you know,
usually
clearly are friendly, right? But
yeah, they have to be, you know, friendly. They have to have that work kind of ethic. Like, they're always usually career change dogs.
Oh, really?
Yes. Judge was actually a pause for a cause dog. He was going to be a disability assistance dog. But he had too much of a, he had everything else going for him, but he had too much of a prey drive. You know, he wanted to go do stuff all the time, and that was not, you know, capable for them. A great example is the pup down in San Antonio, Texas. He's passed on by now, but I think 2014 hero dog, arson dog. She was actually from a high kill shelter.
Really?
The people there saw her drop, and the imprinters go, "Hey, bring her over here." They imprinted her. She was a fabulous dog. Wow. Very similar to your pups. I mean, had that sleek Labrador kind of thing. Kind of like she was an outlier. Judge is an outlier because he's a big monster compared to arson dogs. Like, they always like them to be more of the smaller version, like you know, the English version, that type of stuff. You know, that type of dog, they want a little bit more because getting around a fire scene is kind of difficult.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, do they have to be able to fit into places?
You know, getting around things and also injury-wise and that type of stuff. That's what hurts, you know, why they kind of go for those smaller ones if they can. Gotcha. But it's, yeah, he's pretty agile. He went under, like, we had burned out, what was it? Burned out camper. The only thing that was left was the rails of it. He pretty much crab walked underneath it to get to where he needed to go and then kind of stood up and kind of pointed to where it was and then was like, and I'm like, well, how am I going to get a food over here? You know what I mean? And he's like, well, where's my food?
Oh my gosh.
You know, I always called him a union dog because, you know, he's not leaving until he gets his pay.
Oh my goodness. So, wow. Yeah, I'm getting like all different kinds of questions about that. So they,
I was going to say, I have some too, because I'm like, I'm dying over here.
Oh, go for it. Go for it, Crystal. Because all of a sudden, like, all of a sudden I had a question and then it left. So
I've got it. So you're talking about the different kinds of dogs, which, you know, I kind of asked earlier, and you've just did a really good job of bringing more into it. So that was awesome. And I'm thinking, do you want more of an independent style searcher or more of like a biddable dog? Because I'm thinking about, you know, they're going for food. So how do you keep them motivated, engaged during your training and your real world operations? Because you've mentioned bond and relationship numerous times, which that's like core. That's so key in everything I believe too. So I'm kind of curious about, you know, are they independent? Are they biddable? And then how do you keep them motivated?
Yes. And that's another thing that kind of goes hand in hand with the nose work kind of philosophy. They got to be independent, because that's one of the questions I get in court, that I directed them to that location, you know, and I'm like, well, I don't even know where this is. So I, you know, but you know, that doesn't work in court, but really you want them independent, because all I do is give him one kind of direction. We'll go to the front door. Usually I'll go in first. I got to scope it out to make sure there's where the holes are in the floor, where this is, you know, and all that type of stuff. And then I take him in, and we always have to stay on a 6-foot lead because of what I said about the, you know, food that I can't let him have and things like that. So we always, and for his safety too, because, you know, who knows what's in a fire scene. Yeah. We had a stray pup that was in one time that was going to take him out, that, you know, we kind of went in there and he kind of smelled something. He looked kind of different at me. And I was like, all right. And I let the detective in first, and he goes, yeah, there was a stray, in the back, and they got him out, and they got the, you know, the Humane Society to pick up the pup that was, you know, came in the back. But really we need them independent. So the only thing I do, we go to the front door and I say, seek. That's the only words I say to him. And then he goes around and does his thing. We usually do what's called a, kind of a free search in the beginning, because if he finds something on like a free search, that sample is usually hopping positive, because, you know, he kind of just went around and kind of just followed the scent cones and got to source. If I made, you know, we come back and we do a more directed search, I might just give him another seek towards the wall. And he kind of, because of repetition, we've done that. What I mean by bond is to kind of to know him, to know me, what I expect of him, and me to know his idiosyncrasies of what he does when he finds something, when there's something that is spooking him, or something that is off in the fire scene, that type of thing. So just by working together and kind of knowing that bond we have, that I got the trust in him, he's had the trust in me, that I'm not going to let anything happen to him. That's, like I said, that's where we go. Like for him, especially most labs, you know, and Stacey, you know this, they're fast workers, okay? Yep. Fast workers and things like that. There's an SOG that we have that, you can take the dog in three times. So you go into a fire building, he goes around all the places, you know, and we always do everything. And I'll tell you a story about why you do everything then. Just remind me in case I forget. But do everything. And then if he doesn't find anything, we take him out to the car, let him rest for like 20, 30 minutes, take him in again. And we can do that three times because sometimes if they're fast, you know, just like anything about thresholds, you know, you got to go past to the threshold, that type of thing. So I take him in one of the first couple times and take him in, doesn't find anything, take him out to the car, let him rest, get him back out. Zeke goes in, looks around, smells, sits in the middle of the room, goes, I'm not doing this. I told you there's nothing here.
He's
he's a slow, methodical worker. Uh-huh. He's like, if you put powder on minus 10, that's about where he's at. You know what I mean? So he's very slow. He's very good about, a lot of people ask, does he wear booties on his feet? No. He won't.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the safety, like if he had to wear
the safety. I mean, because he was a slow worker, he would like put his foot down and feel if anything was sharp, he'd kind of move it to the side. And he was very cool in that respect. The only thing he ever got in his foot was when we were going across the street, they just salted the street and got a big thing of rock salt in his between his pads. But other than that, he was really good. Plus, I mean, we go to the fire scenes and they would, you know, broken glass everywhere. The firefighters that were there would brush off the glass and make a path for him. You know,
yeah.
Me, they would have thrown glass on top of it. But Judge, they wipe it off. So they were really good in that respect. So that's kind of like the bond. What I say about the bond is that you have to, and that's something in nose work too. You have to know, you know, when a dog's crittering or when a dog's maybe after some odor that another dog left there. So there's definitely, you know, things that you can notice in your dog when you have that strong bond.
Can you share some of the specific signs, the behaviors that you've learned that, you know, when your arson dog's there?
You can see it in nose work. I purposely love to judge blank rooms.
Yeah.
Because I will watch the dog intensively when they're at the starting line. And the dog knows it's blank. I wholeheartedly believe the dog knows it's blank because they are so different from when there's some type of odor in there. They'll go in there, they'll look, you'll see their faces. They have different mannerisms. Uh-huh. And they'll go in and then the people will be like, oh, no, we got to find something. No, you don't. But, you know, the only thing I don't like about it is the only thing I could say is no.
I was thinking about this. I'm like, you love judging blank rooms, but you're never going to
get it. I love seeing the dog in the blank room, but after they go in, then I could leave. Like I said, all I can say is no, because, you know, I don't know how many people go, oh, my God, I left something in there. You know, I mean, but keep going. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, I bite my tongue a lot at trials.
A friend of mine calls it courtesy searching. It's like, you know, the dog's like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
You know,
all right, fine. If you want me to go through here, you know, I'll go through here. But, you know, usually if they're, you know, heading out the door, that's probably a good sign that there's nothing in there.
Yeah, no, come back in here. Come back in here. We got to
see. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're dragging them back in. Yeah. Yeah. But the other bond is like the little things that I see him, like the air exchange. When air exchange gets very violent, the wrong word, but more aggressive, definitely he's in the area of something. He's just trying to pinpoint it.
Yeah.
That's a really big, you know, tell for me. And it's a tell for a lot of dogs. I mean, everything from, I've seen, you know, boxers do it to other dogs, little chihuahuas do it, you know? So you just got to be attuned to hearing that. And you can hear that air exchange. And then you can hear, like, sometimes dogs are so smart. They'll, if they get in odor that is too much, like we had a fire scene that the guy poured every room in the house. I could smell the gas when I got there. But we still had to kind of go around and find the samples that we needed. And a dog will like go somewhere and kind of clear his nose. Like you'll hear him kind of blow out his nose to try to clear his nose to get a better sample when he come in. So that was really cool about watching that. And you know, it's kind of like a thing that he just needs to clear it. And then sometimes what I'll do is just walk him out of the room and go to another room or something to that effect, and then bring him back to that room. You don't want him to just be, you know, saturated with that odor. Because I still need to get him the source, because if I don't get the source, I don't get the sample that I need, and I don't get, you know, the positive thing from the crime lab.
Yeah.
And that's another thing is that, you know, we I could say we have it a little easier in, you know, our world in detection world, because, you know, I find an alert, I put my pin down where he does it. I go out, I have the, whoever's the investigating fire marshal comes in, say where it is. He takes the sample. We take it outside to kind of give clear air. And then we'll put a whole bunch of dummy cans and the can that's hot and put it in a lineup. And then if judge goes over and alerts on the same can again, that's the one we signed at a crime lab.
Oh, wow.
So we have that added kind of thing because we want the right sample, but also because there's a lot of things in fire scenes called layering that, you know, you have a burned out building, you have ceilings that fall and everything else. You know, right. One thing that might prevent him from going to source is that the ceiling fell on top of where the sample is. So if we pick the ceiling part up, because we don't know it's a ceiling, we pick that part up and we put it in a can, it's not going to have that
cell
in it. So that's why we do the kind of the confirmation, we call it a confirmation sniff outside.
Oh, that's fascinating. So basically you could have what's technically an inaccessible hide, if we were going to use like nose work terms, right?
Yep.
And, but then you're using this technique that you're like the layering to be able to actually get down and figure out where it actually originated.
Right. So if you had an inaccessible hide, say you had an inaccessible birch hide, so it was in deep in a bunch of chairs.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had the dog alert on the chairs. Great. Okay. We can't take chair number one because it's not going to have the hide on it.
Right.
Okay. So we're going to have to take all those layers off to find where the hide is, because that's the only thing that's going to give you a positive sample.
For the quartz and everything.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this is, it's just fascinating. Like, I didn't even think about a lot of these implications.
It's so similar to what we do, and it's amazing.
Yeah. Like, I'm literally thinking like this puts you into such a unique position as someone, you know, coming into the nose work, you know, world to really help in terms of instructing and judging and everything and setting hides, because, you know, what you're saying, it's so relevant to what we're doing in sport. So like so many ways I just never even like really considered actually.
Right. It is.
And that's,
I told Amy and things like that, you know, that's why I love it. And, you know, come January 4th of this year, my 30th year in the city of Allentown, I will be done.
Wow.
And it'll be all canine stuff after that. So,
wow. Huge congratulations on your upcoming retirement. And, you know, it's going to be really exciting to have you a little bit more available locally.
Yes.
And I'll add a huge thank you for all of your service, because that's incredible what you've given to everybody, our community. So thank you.
Oh, no problem. Like I said, it was the
thank you to Judge.
The time I had with Judge, you know, in service and thing. It was the fastest, you know, I got him when he was like 1.5. So 13 and a half, 14 years that I've ever had, you know, as far as that goes, it went so quick. Every day was, a fun day. People at work loved it because, you know, he was, people would come in my office and I'm having a bad day. Can I just still go see Judge? Yeah. You know what I mean? So, you know, he was the floor kind of person to talk to and things like that. And everybody kind of like had a better day when he was there and that type of thing. So he was a big part of the whole city and actually the whole community. So that was really, really cool.
Well, we're going to cut that right there, because Crystal and I had such a fantastic conversation with Lee that this just will not fit into one episode. So stay tuned to next week when we talk more with Lee, and we're going to find out all about handling an arson canine and training an arson canine. So go out, train, have fun with your dogs, and tune in next week.
Canine Detection Collaborative! We appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to caninedetectioncollaborative.com. That's K9detectioncollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.